This programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee. Older Voices is a programme made by CRY 104 FM on the lives of older people living in the Ballymacoda and Ladysbridge area. Their stories are told in their own voices. In this episode, we speak again with Pat Lynch from Aha Vine. Pat begins by speaking about a very happy time in his life, spent playing music with the local band O'Neill Crowley Cayley Band.
There were six of us in the band. Mossy Lynch down the road from us. Mossy was one of these fellas who can turn his hand to anything. He used to play the fiddle, his brother used to play the accordion. They started playing together. And then John Slocum, who lived down the road as well, he had a melodeon while he started playing with him. And then my sister had a fiddle and she kind of started playing, and they set up a band. And shortly after they started up, I joined them myself. I had a piccolo, but I hated the damn thing, and I changed it then after a while to a piccolo, to a tin whistle, a lot easier. Mossy O'Connor was the drummer, God rest his soul. Then you had John Slocum, accordion, and my sister was the fiddle. So you had Mossy Lynch and my sister, two fiddles. You had Cormac and John Slocum, two accordions, Mossy O'Connor on drums, and myself on the whistle. It wasn't a bad group at all, you know. None of us could read music, but Massey again turned us in, he made beautiful music sense, and put O'Neill Crowley Cayley Band in it. And we all had kind of dark suits, and we said we're black dicky bows, and we got somebody, Betty Welsh, from Shandish. She did lovely hats for us. We stitched them onto our coats, so it looked lovely. We looked well. Massey O'Connor was a right Keffler. The other four would be sitting in front of us, the two accordions and two fiddles. And I'd be here with the tin whistle and Mossy O'Connor next to me playing the drums. Now, we'd no singer actually, strangely enough, but Mossy could be taught away to me, see nice and low, because we'd no microphone back there. And sometimes there'd be special parts of the tune coming in, but I'd have to come in kind of loud and put nice twiddles into it. Mossy would say something stupid. You see, you can't play tin whistle and laugh at the same time. And he'd make me laugh, you know. I hear the drumming away, and I was just so prepared. I hear this going, "What did we do with all the bread? Haven't you a dog?" And I'd suddenly bust out laughing. And Marcel Insu would look back and says, "What the hell are you doing with your bread music?"
Because the crack was good.
The crack was good, but he'd come up with droll comments, totally off the wall, you know, in the middle of something. And I'd start laughing, like, "What bread is doing anymore?"
Each local area had their own Cayley band at the time, and he remembers the fun playing in Mrs. Max Hall in Ballymacoda.
And where used you play?
Oh, Ballymacoda virtually all the time. Ballymacoda Hall now, not the community hall now. Mrs. Max Hall. I set up Mrs. Max Hall and Cayley there once a month. For there was a time there in the 60s, and you'd have a crowd there, you know, maybe from Middleton, Ballycotton and things, you know, from around would come to Ballymacoda for the Cayley, you know. Full hall quite regularly. And then, my sister then got married in 64, so she was dropped out of it. And then we kept going. Mossy O'Connor then got us his own, he died in 1977. And that was a big blow to the band, really.
Did you get paid for it, or was it?
Well, we did, but I mean, we never got paid much at all. You know, we never made money out of it, really, you know.
By the sounds of it, it was just more of a hobby.
Oh, it was, yeah. Well, this is it. You see, you had Cayley bands around you. With Max Cayley band in Yall then, you see. Yes, there was a Cayley band there. The Max Pipe band, they had a Cayley band as well. You had Pat Irwin, I think his mother, they had a Cayley band in Killer. There was a cousin of mine, God rest him, Mossy Dugan, there was one of the Cayley band in Castle Martyr. You had local Cayley bands and tend to play locally. I mean, our biggest out would be to go to play Ladysbridge for an event. I mean, that was a big thing. I think we played in Yall, I think, about once, because, I mean, Max Cayley Band had a monopoly in Yall, and we had a monopoly in Ballymacoda. And I remember once I went up to Capoquin to play for something up there in Capoquin. One of the worst nights of the year. And there was a flood and everything else. And I remember Richie Fitzgerald was playing Lismore the same night. And we had something like 22. And all, I think whatever. Somebody came over and said it was 11 over Richie Fitzgerald's other place. And I mean, he was a band, a well-known band. But there, whoever organised it, our dance got more people in than he did. It was just one of those terrible nights over to get out, you know.
Pat has a passion for collecting household items and turned this passion into a labour of love in the form of Fox's Lane Museum here in Youghal. When you enter the door, you step back in time into a fully furnished and equipped traditional Irish country kitchen of 100 years ago.
I was always kind of a hoarder and I began to buy kind of things I hadn't seen before because I was travelling around a lot that time for Seafield Gentis, going from one place to another, up to Athlone, to West Butler, Dublin places. And I'd never pass an antique shop, but I'd go in, pop in and out. And if I had the money in my pocket, I'd buy something. And after a while, I was buying a lot of things for a while, for about 4 or 5 years. And then in the mid-70s, a book came out, 1976 or 75, which was about household gadgets and appliances from the 1830s to 1950s or something. And it had a lovely section in it of coloured pictures of all the things. And I said, God, they're fascinating. And I remember I had one or two or three of them. I said, that's what I'll concentrate on. And I began to get rid of the stuff that wasn't household stuff then. You know, like advertising signs and that sort of thing. I was getting rid of that and you know, trade it in and concentrate on the household things. And then we built an extension at home. Well, the idea was we'd have to have a spare bedroom, supposed to be. We built an extension, well, an extra bedroom for the lads because the room they were in wasn't big enough for them to take us away from one another. So we built a big room for them. But we built a second room as well, as they just have as a spare room in case somebody might come to visit, we need a spare room. And of course, I mean, the spare room was built, I had shelves up, I put all my stuff on display there. But of course, in time, that became too small. So we began to say, we'd have to get something big to put in this into. And it was Anne, actually, she ended up walking. But she wouldn't walk out in the country at night time. But she's a town girl from Tralee, of course. And I'd love walking the night time out the country, but she wouldn't do it at all. So she'd drive into Youghal and go for a walk around the town. And she spotted this shed in Youghal on a little side street for sale. So we went in and had a look at it. And it looks nothing the outside, it still doesn't. It's still the same shed on the outside, it hasn't changed, with a galvanised roof. But inside there's a fine big space, and I said, crap, that's perfect. So we bought it in 1992, opened the museum in 1995.
It hosts the display of over 600 beautifully restored gadgets that trace the evolution and development of household conveniences and appliances used in the home during the 1850s and 1950s.
765 and the dresser, but the dresser is about 100 items. So about 800 items. 2 years ago, or 3 years ago it was now, we did an inventory of the thing. Somebody told me I should really have an inventory. I did a course, Saturday course there for 6 or 7 weeks from time over the university for museum curators. And I said, you should have an inventory, really, to detail everything you have and have a record of it. And then they said that you can get a grant for doing this usually from the Heritage Council. And on the Heritage Council, and they told me they'd give me £2,500 for a grant to do this. I said, perhaps that's great. This was February, and I didn't have it until the end of November. I said, perhaps about £2,500, how bad? And I'd do this and left it after a bit and wondering how I got to go about it. And about April I began to think maybe I should make a start and started visiting museums and to see how I should go about it. Then I suddenly realised there was a lot more to this than met the eye. The upshot of it was, after spending a couple of months up till 11, 12 o'clock at night, after roping in Anne to help me. Now Anne wasn't sort of involved in the museum as such, but I mean, she'd, for instance, a cabinet with 40 urns in it. She'd take out all the urns because I did photograph them in ones and twos and threes and detail every one of them. Then she'd have to put them back in again. And then I discovered the photographs were wrong. She'd have to take them out again and put them back in again. Now, why she didn't brain me with an iron or slang me with the hose and a vacuum cleaner while we were doing this job, I just tell no credit. That's a fact. I remember one night she suddenly looked at me and said, I think I'll go. I said, I think you're better. Because we were both on edge, like I was. You know, just desperate.
I suppose you probably have to catalogue everything.
Every single item is in that catalogue. it's photographed now, not individually. I mean, they have ones and twos. The big items will be in Sydney, and others will be twos and threes. And every item given a detail and an individual number, stating what the item is, what year period it is from, and what it was used for, and maybe some additional note underneath. With the result, I finished up with a book, literally. I decided when I had done that, there's no point in I missing, but that was a collection. I would never take or take from it. So I've stopped collecting. No pressure whatsoever. I mean, I was doing something I loved. I mean, restoring things and reading up about them. But 800 items, I mean, knowing what each one is, when it came, what year it was, and what period it is, and all the rest of it. And it's a collection of collections. I mean, I have a collection of wash machines, about half a dozen wash machines. I have a collection of about a dozen sewing machines. I have a collection of about half a dozen gramophones, half a dozen typewriters, half a dozen telephones, or maybe a dozen telephones. You know, all early ones, you know. I have all my sewing machines, about 10 of them are pre-1900. I have sewing machines going back to the 1860s.
Pat is very active in the storytelling circles and is a member of the Cork Yarn Spinners, who meet monthly to hone their craft in the Spalpeen Fonach pub on South Main Street. Aspiring storytellers are given a great opportunity to perform before a very supportive audience, and the Spalpeen Fonach have been promoting storytelling in Cork for over 20 years. Pat shares one of his stories with us, and I feel it is a fitting end to the series of Older Voices, and I hope you enjoy it.
I suppose it's like I said to Billy before he went to Australia. There are special moments in all of our lives. Special defining moments. Moments that stand out like beacons and stay fresh in our memories right through our lifetime. Now, one such moment in my life, and even though it's just gone 10 years ago now, it's as clear in my mind as if it was yesterday. On the 29th day of November, in the year of our Lord, 2002, I awoke a new man. Or, to be more precise about it, I awoke as a new category of man. When I went to bed on the night of the 28th of November, I went to bed as a retired man and had been on receipt of a retirement pension for the previous 12 months. Now, I feel there's something dignified about the title retired man. Conjures up images of a man who'd been in constant, steady pensionable employment down through the years, had worked diligently and conscientiously, and had now handed the baton of responsibility onto the younger generation, while he took time out in retirement to enjoy the hard-earned fruits of his labours. Time out to breathe in God's fresh air and smell the roses. Time to develop that hobby dabbled in down through the years. Time to indulge the grandchildren. And I was doing it all, living life to the full. I was flying high until that fateful morning of the 29th of November. Now, of course I knew it was coming, but somehow it didn't hit me until the post arrived after breakfast. There it was, in black and white. They were giving me the old age pension. See, old age pension. It was now official. I was officially an old man. Never again would I wake up in the morning a new man. For the rest of my life, I was fated to wake up each day an old man. The realization slowly enveloped me like a cold, wet blanket. I could see the bleak, dreary years stretching out before me. First, the faltering footsteps. They'd probably give me a walking stick for Christmas. Then, being helped to cross the street, going into a shop and buying something I didn't want at all, just to save face because I'd forgotten what I went in for in the first place. Shuffling along the footpath of a bitter November's day, one hand deep in my pocket from the cold because I'd lost one of my woolen mittens. And things would get worse. I'd get lost in the city, not knowing which way to turn. And then, the unthinkable. In my mind's eye, I could see the little heading over a few lines in the inside page of the Examiner. Old man knocked down by bus. Oh God, how did it come to this? And so soon. But wait, something else in the envelope. It's free travel pass for me. free travel by bus or train to any part of the country. What am I thinking? Pull yourself together, Lynch. This is something positive. Free travel. Forget about that old age tag. Sure, I feel as young today as I did yesterday. Indeed, as young as I did 20 years ago. Yes, today can be the first day of a new phase of my life. A phase that with the help of God could be filled with joy and contentment. And with this new travel pass in my pocket, could even be filled with adventure. Suddenly, I was flying high again. You see, it's all in the mind.
We would like to thank Pat Lynch for taking the time to speak with us and for sharing his memories and stories from his life. Older Voices was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee and in association with the Ballymacoda and Ladiesbridge Historical Society. Older Voices was produced and narrated by Orla Reardon and edited by Tomás O'Keefe. Older Voices is a Community Radio Yall production.